Have you ever had a moment where you think, man, someone should really do something about this? Then you realize maybe that someone is you. Well, with the help of GoFundMe, you can change someone's life. You could start a GoFundMe to help a friend pay for school, fund that new community space, or help a local kid finally get to that national competition. I've seen this myself. Last year, a friend of mine launched a GoFundMe to help with medical bills after an unexpected surgery. It was incredible how fast the support rolled in. People want to help. They just need a way to do it. And GoFundMe makes it easy. So do you have a dream, a person, or a cause in your life that could use some support? Don't wait for someone else to bring change. You can be the one who makes a difference. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 200 million people. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com.
Warning, this podcast discusses addiction, mental health, and other sensitive topics. Please listen with care and take a break if needed. You are not alone, and support is available.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction.
Thank you for joining us.
This is Andrew.
This is Jay.
How's everybody doing today? Jay, how you doing today?
Doing all right. Had a nice little convo before this started.
Yeah.
Got ready to get all into the good stuff here.
We got here about an hour ago.
Yeah.
And we've been talking the whole time.
Doing a lot of jawing.
Yeah, it's fine. It's a good time.
It's been good time.
That's half the reason we started this thing, just to hang out more.
Absolutely.
We are going to start out the episode by saying go ahead and check out last week's episode. It is on wherever you got this week's episode.
Got into laughter as medicine a little bit.
Yep.
Talking about the nuance of it as a coping mechanism.
I would like to read a comment that we got on Reddit and shout this out on the podcast.
We got a comment?
Yes, we did. I believe I sent you a picture of this. The episode was just the episode description. That was the post on Reddit that was advertising the episode.
Oh, wait, you did that.
And somebody one-eyed C4T on Reddit.
One-eyed cat, yep.
Former addict and now drug counselor. I'm sure you're good at that, bud. He says, laughter is not the best medicine. Medicine is the best medicine. Not saying people have to be medicated for life, but I am saying that some random person saying laughter is the best medicine isn't very reassuring regarding the veracity of such a claim.
I don't think they listened to the episode.
They definitely didn't listen to the episode, and they also, it might be their first day on the internet.
Since we're bringing up this comment, let's bring this up on the podcast.
Let's do it.
Why'd you have to say I look 40?
Sorry about that.
Threw that in the description. I remember reading that and going, funny. I thought that was the comment, and I was like, how the fuck does this motherfucker know what I look like? And I was like, oh wait, Andrew said that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, that was a comment we got on Reddit. And to that guy, you can go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Dude? Laugh more, dog.
Laugh more. Let's take life less seriously. And then come back and talk to us about it. Anyway, shout out listeners as a whole. We have done, honestly, a lot better than I expected at this point in
that makes two of
a
us.
Podcast. Like, a significant amount more listeners than I have expected.
Shout out to you guys.
When I initially started this at this point. So shout out you guys. You guys are awesome. Appreciate you guys and everything you do for us. Send in more emails. It's at malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com or follow our Instagram at malfunctionjunctionpodcast.
And one other thing is we are trying to get more regular with the trauma battle episodes.
And we'll get into this in a little bit at the end of the episode.
Yeah, we're going to bring it up again. But for those of you who don't stick it out, just please, if you have any interest in doing that, especially if you're in the Denver area, make sure you send in a submission to us. We're continuing to adapt that game so that we can have, you know, bracketed tournament-style battles and keep going.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And all right, sorry about that. We had
technical difficulties
there.
Yeah.
Where were we? We were shouting out listeners and whatnot.
Yep, and just mentioning that, you know, we're still open for submissions.
Correct.
What you got. Any questions and any interest in trauma battle, please let us know.
Absolutely. So let's go ahead and go into, well, how was your week? Like, what'd you do the past week?
Worked.
Yeah.
It's about that. I did get up early today, which was bizarre.
What is early?
I'll break it down later, but 8:30 in the morning.
Whoa, that is early for you. In general, that's pretty early.
For our listeners, my schedule on the average is wake up somewhere between probably about 1 and 4 p.m.
Yeah, it's not great for
I do a late night bartending job. I do get up at 4:30.
True, but it's just not ideal for anybody in general.
No, just to clarify, though, I'm not fucking just gaming. But yeah, no. It's a weird schedule. I don't like... If I could just go to bed as soon as I got off shift, that'd be one thing. But
that's impossible. I get why you do it. I'm not hating on it. I just it sucks.
I know, it's just not functional.
No,
especially I can't do anything between the hours of like 10 and like 9 and 12. That's a brutal time stretch for me. It's just stay up through the night if I got to do something for that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's brutal.
Don't feel like an adult, but it is what it is. We're dealing with it.
Yeah, my week was decent.
That's good.
I'll get into my clean but still a mess here in just a second as we get into that segment.
How's the first week as a man with a degree?
It's been interesting. I mean, fine. I didn't really...
Do you feel more legitimate now?
Is the void in your chest
fulfilled?
No. Still feel like an empty man.
Well, thank God. No, play the other one. Third one was better.
Pussy. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Let me play the world's smallest violin.
Mm-hmm.
You're sad? Huh. Shut up, pussy.
It's good. It's good. Like, we'll get more material for the podcast out of
absolutely.
It.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. But no, anyway, it's been fine. I have been just working on the company. I got my first piece of mail for Crucible Media LLC today. That's dope. It was just the, LPCC office, but yeah.
I don't know this actually. Let's share this with the listeners. What is Crucible for?
Crucible is, so you know what a crucible is?
For like, smelting metals.
Right. Yeah. So it's something that can be brought to extraordinary degrees without breaking.
Mm-hmm.
That's my life.
Ah, resilience.
Right. Resilience.
Attaboy. All right. Nice.
That's why I named it that. I had took a little bit of effort to, it didn't take that much effort to come up with, but I was just like, I thought of it and I was like, that's pretty good. And I was going to go with something else. I don't remember what I was going to go with initially, but it was something. But,
something about former Addict Media didn't have the same ring to it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Fair play.
I just spent the whole week working on that, and I've been working on that nonstop. Every day that has been since I graduated from the Tuesday after it, I took Monday off. I think I went into that last time, but on Tuesday last week, I started that shit like right away, and it was. I mean, honestly, like I don't regret that at all. It's a whole different thing working on something that you enjoy working on rather than like for school.
Yeah.
Okay. Dude, it's a whole different thing because it's like I don't really care that you know this at all, but it's I diagnosed ADHD at age 13 and was been taking Adderall since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what life's like without it. But I've started, in school, it's impossible for me to do anything without this stuff.
Yeah.
But when it comes to, I realized it the other day, and I've taken this, most days of my life, and I realized the other day, I had worked for 4 hours before I had realized that I had forgotten to take my Adderall.
Yeah.
And I was just in the zone.
I mean,
and
that's
just like,
the,
and it's just like the
opposite
me,
swing of it, right? Like,
right.
When you have that, like that dopamine hit off of it, you're like, all right, this is the thing I'm doing. Nobody can stop me from doing it.
Right. Yeah. And it's like, and I think that's a, I don't know, piece of advice for anyone. Find what you love, and at the very least, try to do that, even if it's just as a hobby, or even if it's only can be as a hobby. You can't be professional at it.
Mm-hmm.
Do it, because if it makes you feel good, do it. Because you shouldn't just do something that's soul sucking. I've had soul sucking jobs, and I And I'm sure, and everyone has had soul-sucking jobs.
Yeah, it's kind but of a they, prerequisite.
It's a prerequisite for having for be a fucking adult. Like, mm-hmm. you have to have a shitty job. And, you know, I would rather make a lot less money and work a lot harder at my own thing than make more money and work easier as for somebody else's thing.
And I think a big part of it, too, is, like, when you have something that you get to create into, there's, like, a natural fulfillment that comes out of it that you just can't find with anything else. And as much as I will say I am a little bit of a, like, a willing participant in the rat race at times, I think that, like, there's a large benefit to having the 9-to-5, and it's something that can be effective for most people. When you have something that you truly created, even if you end up on the same schedule, you get, like, a much longer-lasting reward effect from it.
Yeah.
Even if you have something like a 9-to-5 that's productive for you, at the end of the day, you just don't get that, like, long-term gratification.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yes, I have a hard time with authority in the first place.
No shit.
Right, yeah. I think we may have talked about this on the last episode, but...
I think you may have talked about it on every episode.
Yeah, probably. Fuck those guys. Yeah, anyway, we'll get into clean but still a mess, because that actually leads into my next part here on clean but still a mess. Oh, boy. It's been fine. I've had to think about, like, and this is definitely convincing me that I am, in fact, an adult and not just a, like we had mentioned last week for you, a child masquerading as an adult. And yep, I think you're, yeah, yeah. I think you're getting past there every week, but it's mm-hmm. like, I am an adult this time, at least this week. But I want so badly to just egg my apartment complex's front office.
I love that that's the first thing you say.
Yes. I want so badly to just, like, tar and feather every single one of those people that work there. Like, just something that's not going to necessarily kill them, because I don't want to kill them.
No, just make them know they fucked up.
Just make them know that they fucked up. Because I got an email the other day. So, first off, they changed all of the locks in the whole building. And which, whatever. Like, it was fine before. They were analog locks with keys. What do you know? And now...
Ancient tech.
Now they're fucking battery-powered locks that are... by a touchscreen code, which is, I don't know, maybe not the best idea if the fucking, I don't know, door locks and the battery dies. What am I supposed to do then? How am I supposed to get in and out of my apartment if the battery on my fucking lock dies? And it's, oh, I don't know, say one of the days you guys aren't open as a fucking complex. So that's number one.
I think it's also funny that, like, it's connected to Wi-Fi and everything.
It's connected to Wi-Fi and Bluetooth.
And it's a 100.
I can open my... I mean, it's cool and all. I can lock my door from the bar.
It's
from the
tight, bar, but it would take a $150 flipper zero to get into any apartment in this building.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's insane. It's not good. And it's just... So then they also, within the same week, changed the... garage code, so that now, and parking there, it's an enormous garage here. There are two enormous garages in the whole complex, mm-hmm. and big enough for everybody that lives here's cars, but they want to make everybody pay $50 a month, and that's been a thing then, but it was still, like, something you could get past if you needed to, if you wanted to, or if you knew that you could. And I got past it the whole time I lived here. And then the other day, I like go in to let my car in, and they fucking, it's changed. It's a now like a different thing, and I can't input the right code in there. It won't open. And so I'm like, what? Like, so I have to, like, now basically, and my apartment is in the basement.
Yep.
There's no fucking way to get to my front door unless you go in the garage.
Yeah.
Like, so... You want me to pay $50 a month to have access to my front door? Mm-hmm. I already pay you $1,700 a month. It's way too much money. It's way too much money.
Charging for parking in general is an insane idea for any apartment or condominium complex. Mm-hmm. The idea of being like, hey, here's a necessary service
right.
that you have to have.
Right.
And as a resident of this building, you are reasonably entitled to.
Right.
We're going to charge you for it.
Extra.
Mm-hmm. It'd be like charging you for the house key.
Be like charging you for bottles of water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like... I mean, like actively. Because obviously they do. I understand
if they said, hey, if you want more than, you know, if you're in a one bedroom, you get one spot. If you want two spots, you pay for the second spot.
And I would.
Yeah.
I would pay them that.
That's fine. But for the initial spot is insane. It's criminal.
It's criminal. And so I don't know what I can even do about it. But I'm going in there tomorrow or whenever. And I'm going to pay the $50 a month. And I'm going to call them in the process. I say, I hope you're happy that for this $50 a month that I can't afford, but it does hurt. And I hope you're happy about it, you spineless, cash fucking hungry pigs.
Yep.
And then I'm going to leave.
You know what's funny? You'll appreciate this. You can live vicariously through me. So I live in a condominium complex where I rent, you know, like a
sure.
private apartment that's getting leased out.
Right.
So I rent there. They charge for parking. Keeping in mind that at least 85% of the people there own their homes.
Right.
Oh, and they have God. To pay for parking there.
On top of that.
So, yeah, whoever the fuck decided that, I have no idea. I don't know how they got away with that.
I don't know how you get away with that.
Because there's an HOA, but there's no HOA meetings.
If so there I don't are know any lawyers that listen to this show,
yeah.
of any, and you have any advice on, or I mean, really like reasons why they can do that, and you can explain it to me. Please tell me, because I don't understand how they can just get away with mm-hmm. charging for a parking space that is literally like
yep.
a
yep,
fucking yep. two lines. But like,
so get this though, right?
Yeah.
So they charge for parking. So I've lived there for right about 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Never paid for parking.
Right. Yeah.
Retarded. I'm not doing
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I'm not doing
okay. that. So after probably this was about 6 months ago. So after about a year and a half of living there, one day I guess they decided they were going to crack down on it.
Yeah.
And so they went around and put warning stickers.
Oh, dude. That's vandalism.
Yep. So they put warning stickers on everybody's car. Of course, they were a bitch
to get off. They're fucking... Mm-hmm. That's vandalism.
But here's the best part of this story. Almost every single car... I'm saying almost because I don't remember seeing a car that didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
But every car I checked had a sticker on it.
Oh, boy.
Not a single person was paying for it.
Right, yeah.
And I saw a bunch of neighbors. Everybody was pissed off. And I said, are you guys going to pay for parking now? And everybody, every single person, no, absolutely not.
Right.
And so that they did it one more time a few weeks later. They said they were going to start towing cars and ticketing.
Yeah.
Nobody did it.
Right.
And,
of course.
And never mentioned again. And all the flyers they had out for paying for parking, they still have a little box for depositing it. But they had flyers out so you could pay for them. It's not stock anymore, and they've never restocked it since.
Yeah,
so I think they accepted their defeat on that one.
I just don't know how we can defeat these guys, because it's literally like a code on the gate. That you I mean, like, I can...
You would have to get them to actively come out and say, hey, we're going back on this policy. You can't. It's not like they'll forget about it. Because I have outdoor parking, so it's like I'm parking there.
I have indoor parking. You can fucking
tow my car. You have to get into the lawn.
You can't tow my car. It's the fucking tiny garage. There's the garage, the fucking tow truck.
No, but I'm saying, you have to get in the building. So there's not the workaround of like just being able to pull up and park.
Right, yeah. I have to be able to get in the building.
It's insane.
Yeah, it's insane. So, yeah, anyway, the thing that made me feel like an adult, though, is not egging their thing and trying to instead find a way to like beat this in a logical way. And instead just, like, calling them a fucking ridiculous name.
Yeah.
A corporate mongers, fucking douchebag, whatever. I can call them whatever I want. But the reason that I had to, like, think about, like, do I want to respond? And do I want to move out? Like, all this shit. Like, and what eventually just made me go, fuck it. Just pay the $50, dude. Just pay the $50. Cancel some other fucking subscription and pay the $50. And so what made me do that is, like, I just built this studio in my apartment, and it's like, why would I like, how, what's the odds that I'm going to be able to find a place for less money than I'm going to be paying here anyway, that's as good in a good as good of a location that I can have a studio in?
The location is big,
the location's
but
huge.
At the end of the day, let's be real, Mark's going down in Denver. You're paying $1,750 for essentially a studio.
Yeah, it's big though. It's a big. It is a studio.
It's relatively spacious.
It's spacious, but it is a studio. I agree, and it's obviously like I would like to go. If I'm not ready to move out from the perspective of like move in with my girlfriend at the moment. They're
getting like, your goods on this one.
Yeah, they're killing me. Mm-hmm. They're raping me. Anyway, that's my clean but still a mess. I didn't egg the apartment complex. Thought about it. I really thought about it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah, I growing up.
Good on you, buddy.
Growing up, dude.
Anyway, that worker wasn't so lucky.
Which one?
The one who double parked.
Fuck that.
He's got to clean it. But the apartment complex for today, you get out unscathed.
Yeah, for now. For now.
As good shit, bud.
Yeah, right on. How about you?
All right. Well, I already mentioned this a little bit. But yeah, my clean but still mess for this week is for today. I cannot tell you, being in the land of the living is bizarro. I'm so used to functioning where most of my free time is spent, you know, in the hours of 2 in the morning.
How are you right now? Are you tired?
A little bit.
Okay. Normal to be.
But like, I got up this morning. I left my house at like 9:30. I went, I grabbed a little energy drink, went for a drive. I went over to the laundromat. And it was fucking weird, dude. It was weird seeing so many people out and functioning. And I'm not going to lie to you, it kind of...
Forget how many people there are?
Yeah, it kind of bothered me. You know, like I'm so used to driving on empty roads, like no traffic, and there's limited interactions. And for me, life still feels similar to the way it did like during COVID.
Sure.
You know, where
you're
alive
during the night.
And it's nice that way.
Yeah.
I liked it. And then I got up today and I was like, this is fucking bizarre. And I was like, oh, I'm getting road rage again, like I'm driving.
Man, for real. It's not the open road like it is all the time in the night.
No, and I was like, fuck, this is what people deal with.
It takes
every
fucking
day.
30 minutes to get Denver from here during rush hour.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking.
It takes 15 in the middle of the night.
Yeah, yeah. And I was looking.
If you're going slow.
Mm-hmm. I was looking at an apartment complex the other day that was somewhat near my place.
Sure.
And I think it's about 6.2 miles from where I work. Brother, rush hour timing?
That's out 31 minutes. Towards the mountains?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Well, it's pretty out there.
It is.
Yeah, it's really pretty out there.
But it said the rush hour time was like 30 minutes.
Well, you're a night worker. Well, you got to be there. You got to get there. Well, it's going the opposite direction.
Mainly because I'm
going
to be living with my coworker.
Right.
And he works normal human hours.
Truth. But
he works at 9 to 5.
He also drives like a fucking insane person, but
yeah, he'll be all right. He'll take that little fucking Ford and whip it around everybody.
Yeah,
ride it on the goddamn guardrail, ride it like a skateboard. That motherfucker drives insane,
like a madman.
Mm-hmm.
He was telling. I'm not even gonna mention that on the podcast. I'll maybe tell you something after podcast.
Yeah, we won't mention his name or anything.
No, we won't.
He's the opposite of most Mexican drivers I know. Most Mexican drivers I know. That's 9 dudes in a fucking 1992 Silverado.
No, this guy took the back seat out of his car so it could go faster.
Yeah, he wants the minimum amount of people in his car. He drove me one time, and
you know who you are.
Yeah,
shout out.
He drove me one time, and at one point we're driving on like a little back road. It was like 25 miles an hour, and
95,
huh?
95 for him.
Well, so he's driving
normal, the speed limit almost.
He's going normal. He's being human. And then what felt like a half a mile away, the light turns yellow. And I mean, realistically, it had to be like a goddamn eighth of a mile. Okay. It was far. It. Like, if I saw that, even if I'm driving fast that day or like I'm in a huge rush, it would never even cross my mind that it's possible
that you can
to make the light.
Yeah.
And this motherfucker shifted up a gear and just my head smacked that back seat.
Yeah, for real.
And then the rest of the drive, I white knuckled.
Yeah.
And I was like, every time he went
to
shift.
Did you make the light?
Yeah.
That's insanity.
Yeah. I mean, his car is crazy fast. He probably does 0-60 in like 3.5.
I've never ridden in it purely because I mean he's offered, but I've never been like.
I think he does 0-60 in like 3.5 seconds.
Yeah, he's insane. And it's not that I don't trust him. It's that I don't trust other people.
That's what I'm saying. Your margin for error is zero. And so I was shitting myself the rest of the time.
Like he's impeccable at stuff like that. I mean I trust him in that, and you know, his background is backs up in that one, but. Like, I don't trust other people doing that. Like, when you're fucking going around that fast. But anyway, I digress.
He's like an autistic guy with a hankering for danger.
Something like that.
He just has, like, a Rain Man mind when it comes to weaving through shit.
Something like that
a little bit. It was fucking nuts. I'm like, how do you see these openings? You know, I had one other friend like that, and then he got into a fucking car wreck, and I was like, yeah, this proved exactly what I thought.
I'm a little nervous about him getting a motorcycle.
Yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Anyway,
because he's one of those guys, I think is just he'll blast fucking Freebird and go 200 and be like, you know, if I die, I die. I've heard
there's a quote by Hunter S. Thompson about that, something like that. That's called I'm gonna look it up exactly so I don't butcher it. All right, yeah, I got it here. It's this is a Hunter Thompson quote. Hunter S. Thompson, famous Gonzo journalist. This is in. Hell's Angels, his first book that was published and made him famous. This is what made him famous.
Anything to do with the biker gang?
Yeah, he went and lived with the Hell's Angels in the 60s as an undercover journalist for Rolling Stone, and they like beat the hell out of him eventually. He legit lived with him for like years and chronicled all the shit. I have the book. I think it's actually right here. It's right over there. This is the quote, though. And the guy who we're talking about, we're not going to mention your name, but listen in here, buddy, says, "The edge. There's no honest way to explain it, because the only people who really know where it is are the ones who have gone over. The others, the living, are those who pushed their control as far as they felt they could handle it, and then pulled back, or slowed down, or did whatever they had to do when it came time to choose between now and later. But the edge is still out there."
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, there's like a, you know, you're still, the land of the living is what you're saying there. And that's different from what you had been saying the land of the living as, but the only ones who know where the edge are the ones who have gone over.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do this, you keep doing stuff like that as long as it lasts.
Until it doesn't. Every adrenaline junkie,
yeah.
Like free solo mountain climbing. Mm-hmm. Are you fucking dumb?
Retarded.
It's hard for me to discern, like the not obviously the net effect on the humanity, but just in terms of like the psychopathy of it. It's hard for me to discern that from, like, a heroin addict.
Right.
Where I'm like, you know that one of these days, shit might go wrong, and it's over.
Right.
And you're gaining nothing in the process. Just this high, this feeling you're getting out of it. What's that one, Alex Honnold? Is that the dude?
Yeah, I think that's his name.
And he's just, like, he fucking does the most insane shit. Yeah. There's another dude, Alan something. He's a dude that, like, climbed... free solos them.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here, bro?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
He does it knowing he's going to get arrested, doesn't give a fuck. He's not, like,
probably rich enough money off the videos that make him pay bail. That's about it.
Yeah, like, you're making enough to keep yourself from spending 5 to 7 every time you're doing it.
That's ridiculous.
You got a net zero out of it, but, I feel like they don't even do it to say they did it. Like, that's like the people who pay $60,000 for a Sherpa to take them up Everest. Like, those people are going to talk about it 1,000 times till the day they die. These dudes are just off by themselves living the lives of loneliness and then just going and doing the most insane shit. There was one dude I read a story about who did that at Denali in Alaska.
Okay.
The tallest base-to-peak climb in the world.
Right.
And this motherfucker would just go out by himself and try to solo the mountain.
That's...
And then died in the process.
Oh, well, but like,
you know what I mean? Had very little other backstory in life. Didn't make a big deal out of it. Didn't talk to journalists. Nothing. It was just like, yeah, I'm going to go climb that thing by myself. And since we're talking about it, let me bring it up. Have you seen the guy that's that sailed to Hawaii from Oregon? He's been very, very popular lately.
I haven't been on the internet in a while.
Fair. Like, I think his name is
like,
Oliver.
At least not like news internet.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. His name's Oliver, but he's been... He gained an immense amount of popularity because he was working a corporate job, saved up all the money he could, quit, and then bought a sailboat so he could tour the world, like sail the world.
Okay.
And he just sailed from...
I probably saw something about it.
He said he had never sailed in his life before that.
Well.
Yeah. And so, like, wasn't an educated sailor, had spent a life on the water, nothing.
Just going to learn on the
process. Just like, I'm going to do it, yeah. And he made it. He just got there... in the last day or two. But yeah, 24 or 25 days.
Right. That's probably less than I thought it would take him.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But, you know, it was one of those dudes that was just like, fuck it. I'm tired of this. I'm going to go do something else. Dude. You got to respect it.
That's badass.
That is better than doing heroin.
It's better than doing
heroin. Marginally.
That's not adrenaline as much as it is, like, adventure.
Yeah, I think he was
just adrenaline, like, bullshit. I feel like adrenaline junkies, people, like, that are doing the things that it literally is. No, like... It's the difference between climbing Everest. Literally, you're just saying. It's the difference mm-hmm. between climbing Everest and climbing the skyscraper. The adrenaline junkie is the skyscraper, and Everest is an adventure.
Yeah, agreed.
Anyway, let's get on to the next. We got the listener question. Yeah, let's get into this big
listener question here.
We've got a listener question from Christian in Austin. Shout out, Christian. Shout out. I should really call him by his real name. Shout out, Hemi. What's up, Hem Dog? How we doing? Christian Hemi, my boy, has a fucking question for us that says, how important is a supportive community in the process of recovery? How do you find the right community, and what role does it play in sustaining long-term recovery? Thank you, Hemi. Mm-hmm. We appreciate it. Well, do you want to start on that, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I got something to say right off the bat.
Sweet.
Firstly, I think the aspect of finding the right community,
mm-hmm.
specifically when it comes to addiction recovery and finding better habits in life, in a lot of ways is very similar to the Ernest Hemingway quote we talked about.
Right.
I think a lot of times it's very easy to get around communities feel the sense. Huh?
Ernest Hemingway?
Is that what it was?
Oh, Hunter Thompson. Okay, Hunter Thompson, the edge.
I'm an idiot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The quote about, you know, being close to the edge and not knowing that you've gone over it.
Yep.
I think community and recovery can be very similar to that. Anyone who I think has spent time in rehab or around a lot of people who've been in rehab understand that too, where you feel like you got the right community and then it takes one relapse. Hit it.
Keep going.
Oh, okay. You know, it takes one relapse or somebody fucking up or noticing like a pattern of kind of being drained by the situation you're in. And then all of a sudden the community you thought you had built up is kind of dissolving in front of you. It's a incredibly arduous process, and I don't think you ever truly know if you find the right community other than just by feeling.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. That the without the right community, it's honestly sometimes better, in my opinion. For me personally, it's if I don't have the right people to be around, I'd rather be alone.
Right.
I would rather not just like. Sacrifice my soul to fucking be around people. Like I'll be alone if I hate everybody around.
Agreed.
But I don't hate everybody. I just sometimes don't really enjoy being around most people. Most is the wrong word, strong word, but you know, there's a significant amount of people that I like love and like love being around. So the role of the right community, like you said, is so important.
And I don't think the right community is always one that mirrors your situation.
Right.
I think that's really fucking important.
Right.
Especially when it comes to things like mental health and addiction. Because the problem with trying to find people that are constantly aligned with you is that inevitably you end up with people that have the same coping mechanisms and you end up kind of falling into like the commiseration factor. And sure. So sometimes the right community means that like, you know, you're finding people that are actively participating in something. For me, a huge part of this when it came to, like, my mental health when I was in Florida was playing on a pool league. I had one buddy. Those guys I probably wouldn't hang out in many other places with.
Right.
But for that one day a week, every week, and then maybe another one or two when we were, you know, kind of shooting around and say, hey, you want to come get some practice? It took me out of what I was doing. I always enjoyed my time there. I had something that I could practice and get better at. Mm-hmm. And they were solid dudes in that regard.
Right.
Again, they weren't the type of people that I was calling when I was in an emotional pit. But I had a different community for that.
Right.
And
so that's how I feel. Yeah.
The right community for the single individual is very large, right? Like you may have 20, 30, 40 friends, depending on what your life is. But you may have three that are really close that you can actually talk to.
Sure.
And then you have five that you can go do this thing with.
Right.
And 10 that you can go do this thing with. And having that kind of diversity and balance in the larger community, as every community in the world exists, right? Which is there is this hierarchy of importance to certain individuals, right? Yeah, everybody has their own subjective take.
So everybody else's. Like, I mean, in your life, there's three people, there are three to five people, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. And so, finding it is about, I think, just expanding and then dialing back in based on what your needs are at that time.
Yeah, and also I think it's important to, I mean, I think I could just more expand on what you've just been saying here, is that it's, if you're in a community where it's like, I like these people a lot, these are fun, like I found this a lot within like the comedy community when I still was doing that. Mm-hmm. That these are great people. These are those guys, the guys that I was friends with out there in the comedy community, that I mean, if I walked in there still today, I'm sure they'd be like, what's up, dude? Like, I mean, I'm sure that'd be nice to see them. But I'm not like great friends with them, and I had to kind of keep my distance from them at the end of the time of doing comedy, except for a few of them. But at the end of doing comedy for the last, I mean, I don't know, we'll see how it goes soon, but I at the end of doing it, when I quit drinking, it was, I had to distance myself a little bit from a couple of people, because it was just like, I knew they were only good at drinking.
Yeah.
Or at least not only good at drinking, but they were only good to be around if I was drinking. Otherwise they'd be just obnoxious, or they'd just be a drunk person. And then it's just like, and I tried a couple times where I was like, I'm going to do this sober, and it would just be tough. So my point is with that is saying that, like, you can really like the people that you're around and that you're friends with and that you have, like, a community built around, but they can be bad for you at the time.
Yeah,
at least at that time
in
your life.
Your boundaries have to change.
At least at that time in your life. They can be bad for you. And, like, that's tough, man, because it's, you know, a lot of times, like, I mean, I'm noticing this right now with, not with one in my own situation, but I'm not even going to say who this person is to me, but they're, I know someone who is having an issue with a friend where the friend is extremely overbearing and they really only talk about like a couple of topics, and it's usually complaining about their life or like saying how they like her. It's a girl, and they're how like they really are like in love with this guy that they broke up with a few months ago. That's like a total bad person for them. And they've got this other guy who's like, going out of their way for her and like, you know, but doesn't want them at all. And you know, it was, I don't want to go too into detail, but, the point being of like, sometimes you have to like pull back from friends because they're bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, and it's not necessarily their fault. And it's not necessarily forever.
It can be exactly. Yeah. It can be periods where they're going through something. And I mean, I noticed that a lot.
I've had that happen to me too.
Yeah, like, I've had that happen a lot with mental health stuff, especially like friends that got really down. And I'm like, look, if you get to a bad spot, call me. But I'm trying to work out of being in this mental pit for months, and now I'm around you. And like, this was super prevalent in high school. Like, I had these guys that I fucking loved to death, and then like I had a couple buddies, and they'd call me like, you know, once every 2 weeks. And they would, the only thing they'd ever talk about was like, dude, I'm thinking about killing myself. And it was like, I can't be your therapist, bro.
Nah, it's just,
and I love you so much, but this has
to,
like,
it's not fair.
Right. And it's not
fair to your friends to talk like that to them. Like, cause they'd love you too, man. It's like, that's why therapists exist. Like, they have to be a third party.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
I think the point of what both of us are saying too is that having a good community and a strong community doesn't start with the community. It starts with your ability to set boundaries. That you can have a community of good people that are good for you if you are able to make sure you're spending the time with them in the right spaces.
Right, exactly.
If you fail to do that, then somebody who could be beneficial to your life, that you may really enjoy spending time doing with things, and then you start kind of bleeding into these other areas that they may not be so beneficial to you, all of a sudden that community becomes somewhat corrupted. Right. Yeah. And so you have to be really wary of that. We pulled up a couple stats for this. I mean, this one was from the National Institute on Drug Abuse. The people with strong social networks are twice as likely to remain sober compared to those without support. Mm-hmm. Huge stuff. Let's see. This one was reduction relapse rates.
I saw one of them in there about... and this is why... Oh, I was getting into it. But the AA and NA meetings, mm-hmm, about like people that are involved with those things. Like,
60-70% more likely to maintain sobriety for at least a year.
Yeah, and that's I can't ever discount that because it really just matters how you're doing it. It doesn't matter how you're doing it, it just matters that you're doing it, that you're, mm-hmm, getting healthy from whatever it is. And I've explained my thoughts on AA in this podcast before, but the reason that is because it's a community. When I was going to AA, I would see the same people there every night. We'd have a cigarette together before. We'd go into the meeting. We'd share our part of the, try to be involved. And then you'd hang out with everybody after the end. And then you'd be like, hey, let's go to a restaurant or whatever. And it's just like, you'd hang out with these people. And sometimes you'd end up hanging out with these people till like 3 a.m, just like you would on drinking, but you'd be sober and it'd be some of the best times of your life. That's literally at the time when I was doing that, it was some of the best times of my life. Mm-hmm. But I've explained how I feel about AA on there. I just didn't think I could live like that. I didn't think I could live like sober, like actually. And I respect that word. That's why I don't call myself sober. Because if you slip up and sometimes just say sobriety, but whatever you're talking about, like, but I'm not sober. I don't drink alcohol. I don't do hard drugs. Mm-hmm. But I smoke weed every day. I mentioned earlier, I take Adderall. If I have prescription medication, and I have a prescription for Adderall, that's not a loophole. That doesn't mean just like, oh yeah, I'm sober, but I take Adderall every day. Well, I'm sober still. No, you're not, dude. You are not sober. You can.
It's not recreational, but that's you are not, still.
I'm not recreational, but you're altering your. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
It shows a lot of self-awareness, though, to understand that like that may negatively impact the community. Not everybody has that.
No. Yeah. And that's where the harm reduction stuff. I mean, look, as long as you're doing, no one's going to get mad at you for doing anything. As long as you're doing something that isn't going to harm someone else or really harm yourself worse. If harm yourself beyond what you have stated to your friends, this is harming me. If you're the type of person that's like, oh yeah, I can't drink alcohol. Like for me, if I were to be like, I can't drink alcohol. I cannot drink alcohol. It fucks up my life. And then I were to go drink alcohol. I mean, like, what are my friends at the harm reduction scene supposed to like say about that? Didn't you just say you were, mm-hmm, bad about alcohol? Then why are you doing it? Or are they just supposed to shut up about it? Like, you're supposed to say something about it if they've stated something about it, but it's
and that accountability factor, the big part of being in a good community.
Right.
But when you or someone else is repeatedly falling into that, it becomes a burden.
Right.
You
know? No, absolutely.
And I'd like to get into what your thoughts are on the aspect of how do you find the right community? Like, what avenues would you suggest? What things do you do to help kind of find
you? I don't even know if I have an advice on that. I mean, thankfully, I have found the right community to be around, at least in this phase of my life. And it's been great for me, the Kava community. Mm-hmm. It's been fantastic. And I've found other communities in the past that were great too. I had a lot of fun in the comedy community here. I was the sober community in Austin. That was a lot of fun too. Like when I actually was sober, but like the Kava community here in Denver has been phenomenal for my life and as a whole, like keeping me on a healthy path.
Yeah.
Healthier path.
The straight and narrow ish.
Sure. Yeah, but I stumbled into it. I 100% stumbled into it. I would not have, I mean, it was a total, I walked by the place a day after it opened and I was drunk and I was like, oh, kava. I know what kava is. I used to drink kava in high school because I played rugby and we had a bunch of Polynesians on our team. And a shout out rugby boys from California, my NorCal Sierra Foothills gang. We would drink kava in high school at the rugby party, so I knew what it was. But I was drunk and I was just kept walking. And then I went home, and then the next day I like dropped acid. And I was like, you know what? I took the ketamine experience and like decided to quit drinking alcohol. That was that night. Mm-hmm. The next day, I walked in because I was on acid, and I was just walking around the whole neighborhood, and I like walked into the kava bar, and just like started talking to people to the bartender. It was Manny. Shout out Manny. And
hey, Manuel.
And he we just got to talking, and I was hanging out and. Felt good. The drinks felt good. I had the Kratom and the kava. It was feeling good. And then I was high as fucking itchy the rest of the day because I drank too much. I get itchy when I drink too much of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That literally from then on, I was like, I think I'm going to go back there. And I just kept going back and kept going back and kept going back. And then by the time I knew it, I was off alcohol for a month. I was like, oh, my God, I haven't drank in a month. And I didn't, like... When I quit drinking, I didn't like go. I knew pretty well about myself that if I told myself, "You're done with alcohol for the rest of your life," that I was probably going to be drunk in a week. Mm-hmm. But if I told myself, "You're not drinking for today," you're not drinking for the next day. Like when that day came around, you know, and you're just not drinking for today.
Taking it
one step at a time. And if you, by the way, I was doing it alone. So, and I told myself, if you start to feel like you might have a seizure, drink. It's not worth a seizure. Fucking drink. But, like, I never got to that point. And I, you know, thankfully just kind of got off of it. And a lot of that was due to the kava community. But to say that I would have any inclination on how to find one's community would be false, because I stumbled upon it.
I think you do, though. I think maybe you're not acknowledging it enough, but I think the fact
I have one thing I just thought of.
And I think the fact that you're willing to explore different things is a big part of it. It's something I've struggled with, especially in periods where I had, legitimately where I felt like I had zero community at all.
Mm-hmm. Been there, too.
It was because I was doing the same thing over and over again.
Right, been there.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier a little bit, that I'm trying to expand my life even more.
Right.
But, I mean, there were periods of my life where I just wasn't around anyone.
Right.
And I would just do the same thing, and I was nervous about trying new stuff, and I would just spend my time in the house and, like, you know, kind of rotting away in bed or on my phone or something. And if you do that, finding the right community is always going to be impossible. You have to be willing to take the chance. Rejection therapy is fan-fucking-tastic. Yeah. Ask out the fucking hot girl you think you don't have a chance with. Start going around. Send in job applications. Check out a new place. Go do like stand-up comedy or karaoke. Well, but do something you think is going to end poorly.
And be willing to anyways, put yourself out there. That's that basically what you just said. And I think also you have to put yourself in the right place mentally and in your own life to find that kind of thing. Even if that is like, even if you found it through being like, there are a lot of people that found this community through going to rehab. Mm-hmm. So like, even if you had to get to rock bottom to find this community, like, you ended up in the right place anyway. But that was, you had to get to the right state of mind to be willing to be like, okay, these are my people. Mm-hmm. And like, that was me. I had to get, I mean, like, I never thought I would be an addict. Like, I wrote in a paper I wrote one time that it's like, I would imagine very few people wake up one morning and go, you know what, I think I'd like to be a heroin addict. And it's like, that's very true, because it's like nobody like goes down this path. It goes down this path knowing where it ends at the beginning. No one's like, oh, that looks like a good idea.
No.
But like, they just, it's one step at a time, one step at a time, one step at a time. And now you're fucking shooting heroin. Yep. And it's straight up, that's how it is. And it's weird. You don't think it would be that way. But it's just like a breakdown of your barriers of what you're acceptable with.
Yeah, you keep giving an inch.
Yeah, you keep giving an inch, and then it's taking a mile from you. But, so, you know, it's... Yeah, I don't know.
No, I understand.
I don't like thinking on heroin that much. I didn't do it for long enough to be in, like, considered a real user at that. So I don't really like speaking to heroin too much. But it is, I mean, I know it to be that way just based on watching my friends die.
I think it's the way it is for almost any addiction that. I mean, it's a very slow crumbling process most of the time.
Heroin appears to be some sort of demonic thing, as does cocaine. And
ironically, I get the vibe more from cocaine than heroin.
Yeah, it's, I mean, cocaine's a fucking devil, dude. Cocaine
like
is
the
white
devil. People's eyes on it. You're like, holy
shit, dude. Yeah. Heroin, at least, heroin just takes everything from you. Like, it just, like, in terms of, like, your will. I mean, like, at least, like, when I did it, it took away, like, I didn't like it, really. Because it was, like, one of those things that it was, like, it made me feel like I didn't want to do much.
Mm-hmm.
But like I had heard other people of like saying that like it made their lives like they would like lose the anxiety and go do things with it, you know, like they lose their internal anxiety when they did it and be able to like go clean their house.
Yeah, I mean, I was where I lived in Florida. I was working in North Hillsboro.
Mm-hmm.
It was near Pasco. Well, probably most well known for the fact that it's one of the more filmed counties in the show Cops.
Okay. nice.
But, you know, I mean, I was acquainted with quite a few heroin addicts.
Sure.
Who were very open about it. And, right. I mean, shared similar experiences about this kind of like, you know, being functional and feeling okay and like, you know, getting into that kind of golden state of being able to just get around and get shit done, talk to people.
Yep.
And I mean, it was really bizarre for me because I grew up not far from it, but also very sheltered.
Right.
And so I had always assumed it was just like, once you do that, you hate everything. Life is brutal.
Yeah.
And
it's not like that.
Then you meet people that are like, that talk about it as if it's medicine.
See, bizarre. It is medicine, but it's just, it's like you, like anything, you can get addicted to it and you're likely to get addicted to it. And when you do get addicted to it, it's physically addictive. But it's also, like, I mean, there's a reason why fentanyl exists. And, like, we're going a step further than heroin there. But, like, there's a reason why fentanyl exists. And it's because there is pain that exists in your... that can exist in your body that can only be killed by something that strong.
Yeah.
I mean, did you hear... I don't know if you heard Delano talk about it on the Trauma Battle episode, Trauma Battle 2. But he talked about... because he had been... well, he was put on fentanyl for his... I don't know if he talked about it on the episode, but he was put on fentanyl for his cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And like for like a couple of times. And it was like he said it was like it was the only thing that touched the pain.
Yeah. I had a friend in Florida who said she had this very bizarre, medical condition.
Right.
And went around to a lot of doctors and would be like in brutal, like in the fetal position on her side pain. And they gave her, like, maxed her out on morphine.
Yeah.
Couldn't get anything out of it. And she said fentanyl was the only thing.
Yeah.
And I'm not advocating this by any means.
No, but it exists for a reason.
She said it was the best feeling she's ever had.
I would agree. The one time I've done it. One of them, at least. One of the best feelings I've
ever had. Not advocating.
Except for, and truly based on only the panic feeling of it initially was, and that's what I believe kills people. I may be wrong on this, but if there is someone that listens to this podcast that's a medical professional or like an EMT or something like that, and they can prove me wrong on this, please do. My theory on fentanyl death, and this is only based on my own having done fentanyl once accidentally. I thought it was cocaine, and it turned out it was fentanyl. And I, you know, cocaine, you think you're going up. It's an upper.
Mm-hmm.
I instead just, it was like up, and you just straight down under the ground a million miles an hour. There's part of me that thinks that, like, when people get fentanyl, it's like, whoa, what did I just do? What the hell? And you have your heart starts to palpitate and you start to go into cardiac arrest, and that's how you die. That's my theory, is that you die of cardiac arrest when you die of fentanyl.
From the panic state?
From the panic state.
Cause I noticed it when I had done it, I was like, my heart started to palpitate and I was like, I had to take myself away from it and be like, this is probably fentanyl. You need to just sit down and lay down and relax. You need to just hang out. You can't like, cause I was already an addict at the time and I was doing a lot of ketamine. So I knew like where I knew that I didn't just do cocaine and I knew that the closest thing to it was going to like around the time was going to be fentanyl, like that was being brought around.
Fencing fucking everything.
Everything now. Dude. And it's, that's why I don't do drugs anymore because of that. I mean, obviously like other things too, but like, that's one of the main reasons I just don't even touch the powders. Cause it's just like, it's not fucking worth it, dude. I have Narcan in the fucking, in my closet, in my drug box, but it's like, I don't want to have to carry that.
Yeah, it's good to have around, though.
Yeah, that's, I
mean,
right.
We recently saw a situation where that was...
Really? Needed. At the KB?
Yeah, but...
Really? Like an outside thing, or is someone inside?
Inside.
Oh, you can tell me about that later.
But yeah, I mean, that too is a very important part of the benefits of community, is having people in... And I don't just mean that in the literal sense of, like, the emergency circumstance of somebody being able to call the cops.
Right, yeah.
But having people around you that can kind of catch you when you're falling is so fucking
And don't, that's
important.
Not something to be, to always be falling.
No.
You can't you always don't want be to falling. Abuse Otherwise, you're gone. People can only, I was thinking about this earlier today, that like when you, like you can, if you have friends that you can lean on, you know, that's fantastic. Good for you. You're really lucky if you have friends that you can lean on. But you have to remember that, say you lean on someone 1%, and then you know, you keep leaning, you lean on them another 2%, and then 3%, and then now you're on them 6%, you know, and it's, you started off with 1, but now you've gone on to 3, and like, my dad used to tell me that like, a relationship is a lot like a transaction, in a couple of different ways. It's not, you shouldn't be transactional with your relationships, but it is a lot like, if I am always doing something for you, and you are not doing a single thing ever back for me, then what do I think the relationship matters to you for? You're just using me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, absolutely. And
or
so,
just singular dependence, if you're
right.
With
yeah, sure.
Fuck.
And so, you know, it's important to be like, you know, if you are going to lean on someone, allow them to lean back on you so that it can teeter back and forth. Mm-hmm. And it's, you guys can help each other both when you're down. Like, or when one's down, you pick them back up. But you cannot always be falling down and expect everybody to pick you back up, because it's just not the way the world works. You can't do that.
No, it's not functional.
No.
Not healthy.
Well, let's get on to the next section here. Thank you again, Christian. And we're going to move on to our next segment, which is called Why Am I Just Hearing of This? And that is our sections that we go ahead and talk about things that are... in our lives that we wish we knew when we were in active addiction. And I'll go ahead and let you start on that.
Cool. I was thinking about it earlier today a lot, but because I'm still struggling with some of this now. But I really wish I knew the extent and ability to become aware of or identify negative feedback loops in my life.
Okay.
What do you mean
by that?
So I think addiction kind of is one in general, right? So it's like this with whether it's addiction, sleeping, for me, food. But, you know, you don't like the way things are. So you fall into a state of panic, rely more on this coping mechanism. Then the thing gets worse. You have more anxiety.
You talked about this a little bit
right,
before.
Right, and the cycle reoccurs. Yeah. And I think, again, that's really prevalent with most forms of addiction. If it's for, you know, a lot of times in my life it was for my mental state. It's like,
right.
I don't want to be sober. I don't want to think about this.
Yep.
So then, you know, you stay not sober. It's why I've smoked weed constantly. It's like, I can't be thinking about this right now. No, I can't deal with it. And then I immediately go hit a bowl.
Right.
And it just became this thing where I would push it further and further back. And the problem would just fester in the corner. And then, you know,
Play that game.
And so for me, a lot of times, it was really big with alcohol as well. In my mind, I was thinking every time was kind of a medicine. You know, it was that approach of like, well, I'm just doing this because right now I'm really stressing. I'm treating my anxiety.
Absolutely.
And it, because I had never taken a step back to really look at the problem, because I'm a person that has such an addictive personality, mm-hmm. that everything I do by nature, if it's good once, why would I not do it again tomorrow?
Yep.
You know?
That's me too.
And it's like that with like I've been that the way things my whole I life. Drink.
I've been that way with, I mean, I'm still with
the
that
gas
way.
Nicotine. Stations I go to, nicotine. The food I eat. It's like, all right, well, it was good yesterday. I'm having it today too.
Right.
Yeah. And then tomorrow I'm going to have it. And then the next day. And drugs were big like that with me, yep. where I just eventually would step back and go, fuck, I haven't been sober in a year and a half now. Yeah. Like for so much as an hour. Right. Like for every second of the day, other than maybe this tiny little section in the morning, or if I was working and I couldn't get, you know, I had sobered up in absolutely. Time. And so I had spent all this time where, in my mind, I was looking at it as a day-by-day thing and being like, well, today I just need it right now. And then I would go, oh, fuck, here I am a year into this, so much worse than I was when I had started it. And I'm still telling myself it's for the same reasons. And it was really, really hard for me to ever take a step back in the moment and go, oh, well, I've been on this pattern. And every time I'm doing this, it's leading to something more negative, and then I'm ending up in the same situation.
Right.
To me, I had stayed in that mindset of like, I think this is something beneficial. And I had lied to myself and created this mental state of being like...
The addiction also lies to you too.
It's
like, it's like, oh, you're just doing it right now. Mm-hmm. This is just for now.
And that, you know, as I got older, being able to analyze those patterns, even though I still struggle with the changing it part, I still have those issues. I don't lie to myself in the same way.
Yeah.
And so there is a little bit
I'm
of
good
the,
at catching myself bullshit.
Yeah,
myself.
The ability to go, okay, well, I have to start doing something. And then I can talk to people and be like, yeah, I'm struggling with this. I told you about this earlier when we were talking about going to the baseball game. I'm like, I'm struggling.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's right. 3 years ago or 4 years
you
ago.
You just wouldn't have even told yourself that.
Yeah, I would have told you, oh, yeah, we'll do something. And I'd full on bullshit to you.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the day would
full
come.
Well, that you wouldn't be able to do that anyway if you hadn't tried. Yeah.
The day would come and I'd skip it. Or I would tell myself, oh, yeah, sure, that's fine. And because I didn't want you to think I was incapable of making plans on my own.
Absolutely.
But now I can kind of do that and get accountability from the people around me, which has been.
That's good.
Yeah, very good.
And then eventually be able to do it yourself.
Mm hmm.
Yep. Word. Well, that's a good one. That's pretty good to. You can definitely find yourself in those negative feedback loops pretty easily if you let yourself. What I wish I knew back then type thing is today. I'm going to, well, first off, I'll mention off the top, my cousin Ryan this week turned 18. So happy birthday, Ryan. We love you. I am sharing that because I sent him a text, just to kind of, I mean, I'm the oldest cousin, he's the youngest. So I feel like there's a, you know, I feel like I should give him a piece of advice that the rest of the family's not going to give him on his 18th birthday. Mm-hmm. And so I sent him a text on his 18th birthday that said, things I wish I knew when I was 18. And I made this all up. And it says, when it comes to women, never party without your party hat unless you're willing to raise a kid without her or with her. Trust me. Not all drugs are created equal. Stay away from the ones that make you feel like Batman. Cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamine. Stay out of fights. Only bad things can come from fighting. It's not even close to worth it. And just because alcohol is legal doesn't mean that it's harmless. So I told him those things, just kind of, he's a good kid, man. He's got some promise in his life, but he's just young. He's got to work towards it. And those are things that I was trying to think what I was writing it, like, what do I wish I was writing myself as an 18-year-old? Mm-hmm. Because it was truly like, hey, like, I made all these mistakes growing up. From 18 to now almost 30, and like I made so many mistakes that usually like any one of the mistakes that I made handicaps a person for life, and I'm somehow in a situation where I'm not even, I'm not even close to that.
Still kicking.
Still kicking by a long shot. Mm-hmm. Still throwing left boots left and right, dude. But I just thought about it from like, what would I want? What would I need to hear? And he's definitely than me about a lot, but like he's, I mean, he's my cousin. I definitely love him. I want him to do well. And I wanted to give him a piece of advice that would, help towards that at least help rather than hurt. I wouldn't want to tell him, you know, hey, you can, you know, smoke pot with me now, man. Like, you know, like you can, but like, anyway, let's get on to the next one. We'll do this is our last segment here. We're doing pretty good. We're in hour four right now.
Huh?
We're in hour four right now on this. That's pretty good.
Hour and 4 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was like, we're at hour four. What the fuck?
No, an hour and four.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, there you go. So I'll start here with the song of the week here. That would be Town Rat Heathen by Hunter Root. It's a good song. It starts out, I'll read off these lyrics that I got here, but there's the one that's, it starts out with getting drunk by the figure eight, figure one more beer ought to set me straight, young and carefree as a boy could be, whiskey smokes and LSD, railroad tracks run along the creek, walk 'em up and down in the summer heat, same old things, wait hold on, same old boy changing like the seasons, country kid turned into a town rat heathen. And it's got a fucking sick guitar line with it. It's the nice acoustic with like a slide guitar on the acoustic, and it's fucking, it's a sick song. And it's like this kid Hunter Root, he's from Arkansas, I believe, or I forget, I think he's from Arkansas, and he plays out in Nashville, I believe, at his base and for music. But he's got some really good stuff, man. He's a really talented songwriter. And
is he still kind of on the come up, or has he been around a while?
He's pretty much on the come up, I would imagine. I think he's my age, so he's like 29, gotcha. 30. So I think he's 30. But yeah, so he's got a band called Medusa's Disco. They're pretty sick. Pretty
sick name.
Yeah, they're pretty sick, dude. They got some cool stuff. Maybe I'll shout out another one of their songs some other time. But that's Town Rat Heathen by Hunter Root.
Nice.
Yep.
Mine this week is Way It Was by Can't Swim.
Okay.
Nice little, I don't know the subgenres of rock too well.
Okay.
But it's relatively intense. There's a good bit of little screaming in there.
Sure.
I think it would be like post-hardcore. I'm not 100% positive.
Okay. I'm not really good with subgenres either.
Yeah, it's a solid song. It's a little bit more on the down emotional side.
Sure.
Not as uplifting, if I'm being honest. But it's something I've been dealing with over the last couple months and feeling like I'm starting to kind of come out of, which is making do with the fact of how many things like didn't end up the way I wanted them to.
Right.
Being in a position now where I'm like, fuck, I gotta lose weight and I gotta start taking care of shit. And it's like, oh shit, now I gotta do all this work to get back to normal. Mm-hmm. And this song kind of talks about that. And it's, you know, I'm all alone now, longing for the comfort of home. I've lost touch with the people I know. Do I believe what you said? Was it all true? And it's, you know, it's just about kind of this getting disconnected. And being out here, I deal with that a lot. Mm-hmm. But luckily, I've been starting to kind of get in contact with old people. There's a couple lines in the song that do kind of reference that type. But at the end of the day, if I'm being 100% honest, it's just a sick fucking jam. It goes hard.
Hmm.
Can't Swim is an awesome little, like, grungy type band.
That's cool.
Yeah, I'll share some of their songs with you.
Yeah.
But yeah, mainly one of those songs just kind of resonates. Yeah, sick music. Nice. Check it out.
Well, cool. Well, that is pretty much it for us. We'll go ahead and say really just this one last thing before we get on out of here, which is that we are changing our plan going forward.
Mm-hmm.
We are still going to be dropping one episode a week on Saturday. We will also be dropping a second episode a week. Yeah. And that'll be coming either Tuesday or Wednesday. We are not sure yet.
We'll see.
Well,
Monday or Tuesday probably.
Dropping? Wednesday.
Yeah, because Wednesday is still going to be...
It's TBD.
TBD, TBD.
If, one of those 3 days. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we're going to be dropping a second episode a week.
That will be alternating solo episodes. So what we'll have there is 1 week it'll be me starting off this next time around that it'll be released.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be me to my job to have a solo episode, whatever that looks like, I think. Whether you want to bring in someone to have an interview, whether you want to, you know, just talk on your own, do some research, a research podcast episode, something like that. Whatever it is, it's up to myself first and then Jay alternating, and mm-hmm. we'll do that each week. And then we will also potentially have a third episode sometimes.
Nice, very nice.
Yes, with a trauma battle every other week or every third week.
Mm-hmm.
We're not sure yet.
So we'll see how many spots we can fill.
We're trying to figure out the trauma battle thing. And that's not to say that we're not going to do it, because we are certainly going full steam ahead with this. Oh, the trauma 100%. Battle is a fucking great idea, and we're going to keep going with it. I've trademarked it.
Did you? Sick.
But yeah, I think that that's it's a good idea, and I think that we're going to do some fun shit with it. However, we don't have a lot of people willing to come and talk about their trauma all the time. And so that being said, if you're willing to come out onto the podcast and share your traumas with another addict and us, and really not just share, but put them to the test.
Yeah, you got to be willing to get down dirty.
Put them down as if they were Pokemon cards and you were telling them, "I choose you, Pikachu." That's right. Anyway, yeah, hit that email line if you want to come on and give us a an interview, or if you want to do a trauma battle. That is, again, malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com.
Bingo. If Pikachu was a trauma,
okay,
which one do you think? What do you think it would be? Maybe like a cocaine overdose.
Molested as a child. Right, no, we're going to get out of here, folks. That's very much, everybody. Everyone have a good, nice week.